So welcome back, for those of you who are coming back for the second evening in our five-part series. And what I'm doing these weeks is giving the basic instructions in mindfulness meditation that we do here at IMC. And the series, in a sense, builds on itself each week in that the preceding week lays the foundation, in a sense, for being able to do the next week. And the basic idea of mindfulness is to be awake, to be attentive to what's happening. And one of the ancient symbols or representing the awakened mind in Buddhism is that of a lotus blossom. In particular, the idea of a lotus a lotus growing out of muddy water. And I never, you know, I've seen lotuses, but the idea said as a lotus grows up out of the muddy water, whatever mud that it picks up as it comes through the surface of the water, whatever water, whatever mud, washes off, and as it opens up, it's pure. And so, but it has its root in the mud. And so in the same way, the awakened mind is something which has its root in our life, the life as our world that we live in. But there's something about the awakened mind that is unstained by the dirt, the dust of the world. There's something about the awareness which can help set us free from being entangled with this world that we often get entangled with. And if you have any doubts about whether you are entangled with the world, all you have to do is sit, close your eyes, and try to follow your breath. And see if you can get 20 breaths in a row. And chances are that if you're new to all this, you won't get to 20 breaths in a row very easily. Chances are that it's your entanglements, your preoccupations, concerns, your connection with the world, activities, relationships, hopes, plans, fears, aversions, somehow will pull you into its web of concerns. And that's the entanglement. And so the lotus growing in muddy waters is when the mind can become free of the world, but not by becoming separate from the world, not by going off into some, you know, Himalayan cave and being apart from it all, but really still very much connected to the world, involved with the world, and but free in the midst of it. So there's a famous expression, I think you know, something like, I don't remember exactly how it goes. Anyway, the now the idea of the lotus blossoming in muddy water is like is a symbol for awakening, and I'm very fond that Buddhism uses the word awakening for its highest goal. The word Buddha comes from the word Bodhi. Bodhi means to be awake, and usually when you write it in English in Buddhist writings, you write awake with a capital A because it's a big deal, right? But the idea of awake is such a deceptively simple idea. We're trying to be awake to our life. We're trying to be awake to what our experience is. If we're lost in thought, we're not awake to our experience. If we're filled with judgments and ideas and reactivity to our world, we're not awake. But to be awake, there's something transparent, there's something translucent, there's something independent, something very free and fresh with a mind that's awake to what is here. One of the very wonderful aspects of being awake, and you really can, if you wake up from a nice, wonderful nap or sleep, and you feel really awake in a clear, refreshed way, there's something about that state itself which seems very satisfying. Now, when you're awake, generally you're awake to something. You know, you wake to the morning light that comes in through the window, or there's just perceptions and experience of the world that's part of that. But that feeling of being fresh, or clear, or free, or something, is also there in the midst of whatever you're perceiving. So the idea of being awake doesn't require your experience of the world or your experience of yourself to be different. It's being awake to it, and in that being awake to it, finding some freedom, some clarity. Does that make some sense? So this is a very important principle of the mindfulness practice I'm teaching. Is in its essence, mindfulness practice doesn't require us to change our experience. Rather, it's asking us to wake up to it, to be awake to it. And waking up is a little bit more than just knowing it. And so that's part of the challenge of the practice also. What does it mean to know what's happening while it's happening, but in such a way that it kind of feels a kind of quality of being awake, a kind of quality of being not entangled with it, or not caught by it, or not reacting to it, but just, you know, awake. Having said that, you might think that Buddhism then puts inordinate amount of emphasis on the mind being awake. It turns out that in most Buddhist traditions that I know of, the avenue to becoming awake is through the body. And learning to wake up with the body. The body itself is an organ of perception. And so the degree to which we've severed the connection with our body, we've actually severed the connection with that capacity to be awake. And so a lot of what Buddhist practice, some of what Buddhist practice involves, is beginning to trust that it's okay to rest in the body and perceive the world through our body, to be embodied, to be here in this body. And my sense, probably people have analyzed this much more than I have, but my sense is that that our modern society is increasingly going away from being embodied people. You know, people. There's fewer and fewer people who are engaged in real manual work. There are people who are doing that, and in Zen monasteries, manual work is highly praised. It's very, very valuable because of its spiritual potential. How much it really helps people get in touch with themselves and discover themselves and discover how to be awake. But people who spend a lot of time on computers, people spend a lot of time, you know, on the phone or you know, doing activities that are in some ways or other mental, is one of the ways in which people tend to leave their bodies. And then in people's recreational time, their free time, some people spend a lot of time watching television. And television is not a particularly useful way of becoming awake in your body, to be embodied. Usually you shut down your body, you kind of couch potatoes is a classic image of someone watching television. And I would say there's probably a lot of tendencies in our society not to be in the body. I think the epidemic of cell phones. I remember the shock I saw, maybe 8 years ago. I saw someone with a cell phone in the supermarket. And she was talking to someone about the produce that she was watching, discussing what she saw in the produce and the price and the qualities of the produce. And she was basically getting help, I guess, about the produce, you know, the details of the produce. And 8 years ago, I thought that was bizarre. And nowadays, it's normal. People are, you know, on the cell phone all the time. And whereas cell phones have added a certain dimension to our life, I think it also is at many people at the cost of, again, separating ourselves out from our embodied way of being and being present. So I think there's many forces in our modern society that help people not be in their bodies. If you go do something like Zen training at a Zen monastery, you'll find a lot of the training is physical and involves your body, putting your body there. When I was working as a cook in the monastery, a lot of that training, being in the kitchen for a year, was learning about how to be in my body, be present for in my body. And, you know, one of my teachers in the monastery were the carrots. I learned so much from cutting carrots. Or washing dishes. We did a lot of dishes. But the carrots, you know, you'd be there with a knife to cut the carrots, you know, so you're going to discover Zen through cutting carrots, right? So what I found was, I was there cutting the carrots. I try to pay attention to my body, and I'd be surprised to notice that my body was actually like this. You know, one hand, you know, part of me was there with the carrot. The other part was heading for the door. You know, I didn't really want to be there. And so I learned to kind of bring my body around, and actually have my whole body engaged in that carrot. You know, come be here, just fully here. And so being here wasn't just a cognitive thing, knowing what's happening, but it involved a whole sense of presence. Here, I'm going to really be here for this activity. To bring our body into our experience is extremely helpful. I think maybe, you know, 10% of the people who are depressed would be helped dramatically if they just brought their body along into their experience. But because we live so much in the cognitive world, sometimes that cognitive world of story making kind of is depressing, pulls us down. And so get your body in there physically. So I learned a lot from carrot cutting. So if you go to a Zen monastery, a lot of the learning happens with the body. When I was in Japan, the monastery there, it was time for the monks, there were about 30 of us, to cut the lawn. They had this kind of lawn in front of the monastery. And they sent us out there with these little scythes and little clippers with you down on our knees and, you know, cutting because, you know. And I would tell them, you know, this is ridiculous. We could just get a lawnmower. And one person can do it and get it finished with. You know, and then the rest of us can go meditate. And that was sacrilegious for me to say that. Because the point was to really engage in that activity and to have efficient techniques of doing it to get it over with was not the point. The point was the activity of the training that you got from engaging your body in the activity. And if it was too efficient, maybe then, you know, wouldn't be so useful. If it was too efficient, you'd have to meditate too much. And whereas meditation is really good, in Zen training, if all you did was meditate, maybe you wouldn't get that training you need of being in your body, being present with your body, engaging in the activity with your body. So over and over again in different Buddhist traditions that I've seen, the idea of becoming awake is not just a mental thing, but it's very much has to do with being in our body. One reason why people are not in their body is that when you're in your body, you're going to feel more emotions. And some people don't want to feel their emotions. Or a particular emotion, or a particular memory, emotions associated with a particular memory. And so human beings have a tremendous capacity to shut off parts of their body. And I meet people who feel nothing below their waist or nothing below their neck. It's not so uncommon because of that kind of dampening themselves. Some people are afraid of their own power, their own sense of vitality, and they dampen themselves down. The word anxiety, literally in Greek, means to choke. You know, it's kind of to choke, to kind of repress in a certain kind of way. So to be in the body allows us to feel much more fully our emotional life. It also helps us feel much more our reactive life. So one of the things I do, I sit up here a lot and give talks, right? And one of the things I'm constantly trying to do when I'm giving talks. So I try to stay in touch with my body. What's going on with my body? And I find that by doing that, my body gives me very important information about how I'm relating to giving this talk. If I'm getting worried that I'm not getting anything across, and I feel like I need to try harder to kind of make sure you guys, you know, I can feel my body kind of being lifted up, my shoulders go up, I lean forward, and I lose my center. And my body's like, oh, Gil, I think you better notice something here. You got caught by the audience, my idea of the audience, or something. Sit back. And there's various ways I can watch my reaction to the audience, what's going on here, by what happens in my body. Shifts in attention, shifts in leaning forward or back, or pressure, or tightness, this that way. The more you're in your body, the more you're aware of the subtle shifts that go on in the body about how you're reacting to the world. And it's a very important source of information. And if you're not in your body, that source of information is not so available. When I came back from almost 3 years of living in a Zen monastery, I came back to live in San Francisco. In a Zen monastery, most of your day is choreographed. Most of the day you're told how to stand, how to sit, how to walk. Everything has a way of, you know, you're in your body, you're doing, you walk a certain way, you sit a certain way, you step through doorways a certain way, you eat a certain way. You know, it's amazing. You know, for people think of Zen as spontaneity, maybe. But Zen is, you know, it's all choreographed. And you don't have to make a lot of choices. You sit a certain way. When I came back and left the monastery and came back to San Francisco, what surprised me was how many choices an ordinary human being has to make in the course of one day. And before I went to the monastery, I had no idea how many choices I was making. So there was a choice in how I chose to sit in a chair. There was a whole range of choices of how I sat in my chair. Those of you sitting in chairs, you've made a choice of how you sit right now. You could have easily made a slightly different choice. You could have sat a little bit up more straight. You could have sat a little bit further away from the backrest. You could have slouched more. You could have, you know, been kind of askew in the chair. There's many choices you could have made. And so what we do with our body, though, has an impact back on our emotional life. Not only is our emotions expressed through our body, but our body then feeds back onto our emotional life. To give you one, you know, I've had experiences where I felt kind of lousy or depressed, and simply by sitting up straight, my feeling of being lousy or down or blue vanished, went away. It usually isn't that easy, but I've had some experiences of that. I remember the first time I was in college, and I was feeling kind of down and blue, and I noticed that I was such a slouch in the couch that my shoulders were basically in the crack between the seat and the backrest. You know, but you can't get much lower, right? And I noticed that after a while. Boy, I'm really, my posture is terrible. And so what if I sit up straight? And so I sat up straight, and with that sitting up straight, this energy came, and it cleared away what was weighing me down. So the body. This is all to emphasize the tremendous importance of the body in Buddhist training, to become embodied. So, let's do a little meditation. Yes? Turn it a little bit high. If right there in the back there's a big wheel, that big wheel there, if you could turn it counterclockwise. Is that going to do it? Is it coming? How's that? Is that nicer? Yeah, it was kind of. If you would like to stand for a moment and stretch, you've been sitting already for a little while, you're welcome to do that. So, a simple way of talking about meditation, mindfulness practice, is that we're trying to bring our bodies and our minds together in the same place at the same time. If you sit here and you're thinking about what happened earlier today, or what's going to happen tomorrow, then your mind in some way is not in the same place as your body. And since you can't just kind of bring your body into tomorrow, into yesterday so easily, if you're going to harmonize your body and mind, have them together in the same place at the same time, it's really a task of bringing your mind to where the same place as your body is, which is here and now. The idea is to try to bring these together so they work together. So we begin the practice by being conscious about our body, and that can start with care with your posture. And so to sit with a posture that expresses or manifests both a sense of alertness and allows you to relax. Not one or the other, but both. Some people think meditation is about relaxation, so they choose a relaxed posture. That's not, you shouldn't do that. You should have a posture that actually expresses both being alert. Buddhists sometimes talk about a posture which is dignified. And then gently close your eyes. And as a way of settling into your body, connecting to your body, you might take a few long, slow, deep breaths and really feel your chest, your torso, your abdomen kind of expand and contract as you breathe in deeply. And as you exhale, relax, let go, settle into your body. Breathing in deeply. As you exhale, lower yourself into your body like you're lowering yourself into a refreshing pool of water. And then letting your breath return to normal. Letting your belly be relaxed, soft. And take a little bit of time to become conscious of your body, or let consciousness manifest itself in your body. So your body becomes a field of awareness, field of sensing. Global awareness of your body, the best you can. Perhaps so you can feel a sense of three-dimensional quality of the body. Thickness of the body, depth of the body. All the sensations you feel in your body are expressions of your aliveness. Feeling your body, sensing it. Letting it be present. Relaxing. And then within your body, as part of your body, become aware of how your body experiences breathing. If you have trouble finding your body's breathing, you can put your hand on your belly and feel the belly go up and down, move as you breathe. feeling your breathing, feeling the body breathing. Noticing how the inhalations are experienced differently than the exhalations. And as you stay present for your breaths, see if you can let go of the thoughts and concerns you have. As you're meditating, there's nothing you need to think about. It's enough just to feel each breath, breathing in, breathing out. And feeling the breathing. See if you can sustain the attention for a whole series of breaths. So that you're more committed to staying with the breath than you are to wandering off into thinking. When you lose track of the breath because you've gotten caught up in your thoughts, as soon as you notice that, without any commentary or judgment, very simply, matter-of-factly, begin again with your breathing. Relaxing your concerns so that you're not caught up in your thoughts so readily. Coming back to the breath, breathing in and breathing out. And to help you keep the attention with the breathing, you can very, very lightly, the whisper in your mind, name the inhalation is in, the exhalation is out, or the rising of your belly, your chest is rising, the falling is falling. Kind of like a very light, soft feather that brushes across the breathing. So the very light whisper of a name in your mind keeps you there, keeps you connected with the experience of breathing. and now. Letting go of the focus on breathing. Turn your attention, bring your attention to whatever happens to be the strongest sensation in your body. It can be a pleasant one or an unpleasant sensation. It doesn't have to be that strong, but whatever happens to be qualifies as strongest sensation. And then in a very simple, straightforward way, put your awareness right there. Take it in. Be aware of it carefully. Giving it permission to be just the way it is. Your job is simply to notice what that sensation is like. Where it is, how it feels. And the idea here is to be awake to that sensation. Be aware and awake. It might be interesting to very quietly whisper in the mind to name it, label it. If it's pain, discomfort, you might name it as pain or discomfort, or be more particular, hardness, stretching, tension, aching. If it's pleasant, you can notice it as pleasant, or as warmth, or coolness, or smoothness, ease, or fullness. Keep the attention on it. If it disappears while we do this, then go and pay attention to the next strongest sensation. And as you stay with the strongest sensation, notice how you're relating to it. Are you for it or against it? Are you trying to push it away? Or are you impatient about it? Or is there aversion? Is there desire for it, holding to it? The relationship you have to it is different than the experience itself. You just rest with the direct experience and the simplicity of it. Awake, alert, how it is. Notice what happens to it as you bring careful attention to it. Does it get stronger or weaker? Bigger or smaller? Does it disappear? And then let go of the focus on the sensation. And then come back to your breathing again for another couple of minutes. For about 2 more minutes, we'll just sit here and mindfully be with the breath. And see if you can stay with as many breaths in a row as you can. Resting there at ease with the breath.